My name is Chris. I'm a pastor and elder here at Resonate. And if you're kind of new with us, we have been walking through Matthew as a gospel for a long time. And we're going to get through a few chapters in large chunks, including today. It's a doozy. So I'm going to read through it. I still haven't decided whether I'm going to open the floor to questions because there's going to be thousands of them. And I have thousands of questions of this text. But Matthew 24 is where we'll start. We'll read through 44 and then let's start unpacking. So I want to start just with a picture for us. So picture your mid-1980s. So most of us were not born or very young. But there was a pretty pivotal moment that came in the late 80s. And so picture you're in East Germany in the mid-1980s, looking at this imposing Berlin Wall that split your city in two. And it stood there now as this barrier for years, a symbol of division, a symbol of oppression, a symbol of an ever-present reminder that freedom is just out of reach for those of you east of the wall. You can almost feel the weight of it, the thick concrete, the barbed wire on top, and guards patrolling with watchful eyes for miles and miles. And as you stand there, you might find yourself asking similar questions. When is this all going to end? When will this all come down? When will this way of life finally end? When will things finally change? And for the people living in East Germany, hope flickered. But it was often overshadowed year after year. Disappointment, harsh realities. The wall was more than just the physical structure. It represented an entire system, the whole age for decades upon decades as they knew it. And the idea that it would come down someday seemed unlikely. Yet you could also stand there in the mid-80s and go, this system is going to have an end. This whole thing, this whole communist East, has a date on it. I don't know when it's going to be, but it is going to come down. It cannot sustain itself. And in 1989, the wall finally fell. Suddenly, unexpectedly, and world-changingly, and for whatever reason, David Hasselhoff was there. But it was a seemingly permanent switch. A seemingly permanent thing shifted in an instant. And perhaps that's probably, in my mind, one of the most recent historical events where we can be like, that may have actually a lot to do with Jesus' conversation is today. Because here's what I want to do. In a lot of ways, I'm going to spend the next 30 minutes, I hope, talking about why so much of what Jesus talked about actually doesn't have a lot to do with us. That it is very specific to a first century crowd. Now, we will also talk about how all the applications that Jesus means for this crowd are our applications too. And so we will bring it into our understanding of now what do we do with this piece of information. But I think there's a lot of misdirected and misused theology that plays out in the story. And hear me, this is a very open-handed issue amongst even the elders at Resonate. How we understand texts like this are very open-handed. This will be my interpretation and position on it. Sometimes we'll cover the breadth of things on this one. You're hearing mine, okay? You're welcome, and I will gladly recommend people that disagree with me if you guys want after this. But those that disagree with me, here's my critique, though, is that it causes an undue focus on speculation. It causes us to suddenly read all these texts and go, okay, and grab the newspaper and be like, well, that's happening here, so this must be God giving a clear signal. Even though all those signals have existed now for 2,000 years, because people are always at war. But trying to read into events and speculate, date setting, failed predictions that happen throughout the life of the church, things that it gets a heavy focus on Israel's role in history, and it often causes us to neglect the actual immediate application I think Jesus has in the text. And so, that's the journey we're going to go on today, is to bring us to that point. So let's look. Jesus left the temple, was going away when the disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. So they're asking all these buildings. And he answered them, "You see all these, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be one left stone left here, one stone upon another, that will not be thrown down." So they're on their way out. They're heading towards the Mount of Olives, so they're heading east of the city of Jerusalem. And they leave this magnificent temple. And just so you know, I mean, let's try to grasp what Herod had done. So when they rebuilt the temple a couple hundred years before that, it was a shabby version, probably, of the rebuilt temple, a shabby version of Solomon's temple. Herod comes along with a pretty much endless pocketbook and says, "Hey, I want to rebuild this temple for the people." And he does a magnificent job. Here's some pictures even of the temple, as likely would probably be after Herod spent some time rebuilding it. And he had stones that were perfectly quarried. They are as straight as you can imagine. You don't even need mortar to stack these stones upon each other. There was even a question of how that he does this. Engineers are still a little puzzled on some of the construction feats that have been done in that temple still to this day. And so they're magnificent. So two pictures from now, there's this one that's like the weight of it alone. They're like, we have no clue how he got this stone into this temple. We just don't know how he possibly moved it. We don't even have cranes today that can move this stone. And so there's just these questions. But he did a magnificent job building this. But in 70 AD, go back one slide, all the stones were destroyed. City was destroyed, temples destroyed. You can still see the stones that have really not moved in almost 2,000 years, just sitting around the city, that were destroyed. What Jesus had said was the very thing that came to be. We should also remember Matthew's storytelling. So Matthew, this is all happening sort of in Matthew's telling on the same day. Jesus had walked into the city at the beginning of the day and had a whole conversation with his disciples around a fig plant, right? He looked at the fig tree and they're wondering when this fig is, why this fig died so quick and all these sort of things. And if you go back to that sermon, it's very much an indictment on the leadership of Israel. The symbolism, everything is about the Sadducees, it's about Herod, it's about all the heavy hitters in charge of Jerusalem at this time. And they're wondering, when's this all going to change, Jesus? And even his moving mountain analogy was directly connected to Herod. So it's a question of when's this whole corrupt system, when's this leadership, when's God going to be done with this? And Jesus' response would be shocking. The structure, this magnificent structure that was still under construction, even though it was mostly done. Really, Jesus, this is going to all come down too? It's God's home too, Jesus. This is the whole system. It's the age we're in. What's a sign that this age is going to end? And that's where the disciples go next. He went to the Mount of Olives. The disciples asked him previously, "Tell us, when will these things be? When will this destruction of the temple actually happen? When are all these stones going to be overthrown?" That's their question, because that's all that Jesus has said up to this point, is the temple will be destroyed. And they said, "When will this be? And what is the sign of your coming in the end of the age?" So now the disciples start conflating a bunch of stuff, which is not uncommon. Jewish eschatology has its own specific thing. Eschatology is a very nerdy way to talk about the study of like the last things, the end times, all that kind of stuff. Jewish eschatology was very much a two-stage understanding of eschatology. There was present age, marked by sin, brokenness, suffering, death. That's what everybody was living in at the time. And in some ways, we are still. The age to come, Messiah comes, reestablishes Israel, peace, justice. It's like a clear-cut change where Israel gets restored and everything's going to be wonderful from here on out. So when they ask their question, this is very much their mind. We end up with Jesus teaching a whole bunch of parables to drive home that lower one, to say, look, there's going to be weeds and wheat growing together. There's going to be good fish and bad fish. There's going to be yeast that spreads slowly but surely. Jesus comes in multiple times in parables like, you guys have some of your eschatology wrong, and teaches a little bit of there's going to be good and bad for a long period overlap before a final thing. But he's still very clear that what he has come to do is to usher in a new age. And so when they're asking this, what is the end of the age? When will the new one begin? It's connected to this whole destruction of the temple as well. Because Jesus starts speaking about a bunch of things that are going to be very imminent for these people. Jesus says, "See that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and they will lead you astray," which historically we get plenty of. There's Theudas, there's the guy named the Egyptian, there's Simon of Perea, there's Athronges. There's all these various characters who come along after Jesus, all saying that they're the Messiah as well. It happens in history. We have plenty of record of these people. "And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you're not alarmed, for these must take place, and the end is not yet. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom," which I will highlight this as we read these texts. There are Old Testament references all over this section. So Isaiah has got some references already here. And Jesus' point is that the world's going to get crazy. This is unavoidable. Do not be deceived by various promises. And I don't think Jesus has to operate with God goggles in this moment. Jesus certainly could tap into supernatural understanding of the future, but he can also just look at all that was happening, all the corruption that the Sadducees were certainly caught up in, certainly the corruption of Herod, and say, all of this is going to come down. He's just looking at it, and it's like this system is going to crumble. And he's saying, I promise it's going to happen. It's like this. I could stand here and do the same thing, right? And I'm not being prophetic. I can look at the world we're living in now and say, this is ultimately not sustainable. Like, the America we know today, certain ways we do debt systems that we have, and we're indebted to all sorts of various countries, or we have internal debt of our own people, economic systems we create, the way we utilize the free market, it's not sustainable. It's just not. Cost of living versus the cost of housing, vacant real estate all over the place, both commercial and residential. Like, this world either has to change or it will crumble at some point. That's not being prophetic. That's just like looking at the systems and going, that just can't go forever. And so I think Jesus is looking at all of this before there, and it's like, guys, this is all going to come down. And I can also tell you, I promise that there's going to be a bunch of people who are going to come along. Presidential candidates, teachers of all kinds, public figures, radio talk show hosts, podcast hosts that are going to come along and go, we have the answer, we know how to save you. And Jesus is saying, plenty of people are going to come along and do the same thing. And they're going to say just that. But Jesus is like, don't listen to them. Well, he doesn't have the best news. He's like, don't listen to them because the system's doomed and it's going to happen. It's all going to come crumbling. It's unavoidable. Stuff's going to get crazy. And there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All of these are the beginnings of birth pains, which are some Deuteronomy references there. And guess what? There was a massive famine in Rome in the 40s. Earthquakes in Phrygia and Pompeii. Judea suffered a unique collection of earthquakes. Rome had massive infighting amongst itself. You even had four emperors right after Nero leading up to the destruction of the temple who were all infighting various wars with Israel itself. All of this stuff's happening, right? So when Jesus says all this stuff, like, this is all, as Matthew is probably getting to the point where he's starting to write some of this down, it's all happening in his time. "Then they will deliver you up to tribulation, put you to death. You will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. Many false prophets will arise and lead many astray. And because lawlessness will be increased, love of many will go cold." There's some Micah references in that text. And yes, if you read the book of Acts, you read the book of Hebrews, others, all of that stuff takes place, right? The early church gets persecuted. People get put to death. They're hated by the various places they go. We read in the book of Hebrews that some are falling away, even though they seem to be with us at one point. False prophets show up, false leaders leading the church astray. All of this happens in our own Bibles themselves. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So coinciding with the end of the temple, and the old order is also the spread of the gospel. Jesus isn't like going, all this craziness will happen. Now go make disciples. That's not what he says. He's like still listing off, here's all the things that you should expect to be happening all at this time. And one of those is that the gospel would go forth to throughout the whole world, which is the word oikoumene, which gets translated sometimes as whole world, but there's plenty of times where it simply refers to just the Roman Empire. Like, everywhere the Roman Empire is, that's where the gospel went. And it did. By the end of the book of Acts, basically all the major places where the gospel was throughout most of the known Roman Empire. And Jesus is like, and that's where we'll get to this destruction moment. So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand, of course, the abomination of desolation, which is a really good heavy metal band name, right? Just sounds awesome. Here's another thing. This happened in Israel's history. So Daniel, yes, Daniel's clearly the reference. Matthew makes that one clear. Daniel had referenced this abomination of desolation. Guess what? The Israelites already had something that they referred to in history now as the abomination of desolation, which is when the Greeks came to town. Alexander the Great came. The Greeks destroy the temple. And when they do so, they slaughter a pig on the altar. They do all this heinous stuff. And we eventually get the Hanukkah story out of it with the Maccabees. But they referred to this moment as abomination of desolation. And so, once again, you have this sort of reference here, as if Jesus is saying, it's going to happen again, guys. Like, Daniel talked about it, we've already experienced this, but this temple is going to be destroyed, and Rome will come destroy, leaving dead bodies all over the place in this process. It's like, when you see this, let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let the one who is on the housetop not go down to take what is in his house, and let those who are left in the field not turn back to take his cloak. And alas for women who are pregnant, for those who are nursing infants in those days. Pray that your flight may not be in winter or in the Sabbath, and then there will be a great tribulation, such as not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, and never will be. And if those days had not been cut short, no human being would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. And so there's Deuteronomy, there's Exodus, there's Lamentations, there's Daniel, there's Joel, there's all sorts of references in that text. And Jesus is giving practical urgency. Look, when this all goes south, run. So that's simply what he's saying. Run. And all evidence is that the early Christians actually heeded this instruction. Epiphanius, this Greek historian, said, the disciples had been told by Christ directly to abandon Jerusalem because of the siege that they were about to undergo, and they did. They went to Pella, this place east of Jerusalem, into the mountains, and fled for safety. So the earliest Christians heard Matthew 24, knew what was going on, and responded, which is great. Perhaps Matthew's let the reader understand was for that very crowd. And if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, there he is, do not believe it. False Christ, false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders so as to lead you astray if possible, even the elect. See, I've told you beforehand. So if they say to you, look, he is in the wilderness, do not go out. Look, he's in the inner rooms, do not believe. For as lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. So Deuteronomy, Zechariah's in here a bit too. And we get still more warning, similar to before. To recap, you're going to hear rumors of the end. You're going to have false messiahs come along. Do not believe them. Then the world's going to get crazy, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. Which he continues in the next section. It's just how crazy things have gotten. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heaven will be shaken. Then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven in power and great glory. He will send out his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other, which is Amos and Joel, it's early Isaiah, it's Daniel, all in this. And if you're like, Chris, that clearly seems like the future. The problem is, almost every sentence of that is a reference to the past. So Jesus is picking up on prophetic language about the captivity of Israel the first time. So you had all these prophets that were speaking about Babylon, saying, Babylon's coming, this is what it's going to look like, the sun's going to be darkened, all of this kind of language. It's all existing specifically about the Babylonian captivity. And so when Jesus says these things, it's not like these people are going to be like, oh, that sounds scary, I've never heard this before. They're going to be like, You're using the language that everybody, that all these prophets had already said about when, what's going to be the signs of Babylon's in town. Jesus, why are you doing that? To remind them, we've been here before. This has happened. We've watched Jerusalem get ransacked and destroyed, and guess what? It's happening again. That's what they're going to watch. And just to remind them, it's coming again. God used Babylon. God will use Rome. The end of the age, the end of the leadership, heck, even the end of the temple are going to be wrapped up for good. It is not a coincidence that the temple has not been rebuilt and reestablished since 70 AD. This is what Jesus had pointed at. And perhaps it's less about sort of talking about sort of odd future signs and trying to hold the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other and looking for all these details. Perhaps it's more Jesus saying to his audience and to us, we've been here before. There's significant judgment, but in astronomical events that may or may not have been meant to be literal, but yet Jesus, I think, is pointing to that we've been here before. He quotes prophets whose messages were very much about the perseverance that the remnant should have. That's the essential message of almost all of them. Judgment's coming. For those of you who are faithful, persevere. You don't get out of it. Faithful Israelites that were in Jerusalem when it gets ransacked, don't get out of it. They either get taken off to Babylon or they get killed or they suffer, whatever it's going to look like, but persevere. Stuff's going to get crazy. The world's going to go nuts. People are going to promise and make all sorts of promises. Don't believe them. You're just going to have to go through this, and there's no escaping what's coming to the world. And if you're like, yeah, but Jesus, he talks about the coming of the Son of Man. Yeah, but in Daniel, which is where that comes from, the coming of the Son of Man is actually not a picture of the Son of Man coming to earth. If you open up and read that text, it is the Son of Man coming on the clouds to the Ancient of Days to establish his rule forever. And so, for Jesus to make that reference, it's not about his return. It's about him saying, look, all of this became true. He was vindicated in the long run. So when Jesus says, I am the priest, I am the sacrificial system, I am all these things, for that whole system to finally get destroyed for good, vindicates all the things that Jesus said. And then the culmination. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts out its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you start seeing these things, you will know that he is near at the very gate. So disciples, you know how this works. As you start seeing all these things start to get destroyed in Jerusalem, get out of town, just read, discern the times, spot destruction coming. But then he says, well, we'll get there in a second. But he says, truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Which generation? Right? We haven't jumped ahead to future generations or anything like that. Jesus is very clear. This generation will not pass away until what? All of these things, verses 1 through 33, take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. And he's reminding them the importance of discerning their times. But he also says, concerning the day or the hour, no one knows. Not even the angels of heaven nor the Son, but the Father only. So he's like, look, be ready for this, but also don't break out the maps and the charts. Don't start graphing all the things that are clearly the sequence, and we've seen this thing, we checked it off the list, we're hit this one now. He's like, that's not what I'm giving you instructions for. And Jesus is like, I don't even know some of these details. But be ready. For as were days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark. And they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken and one left. Two women will be grinding in the mill, one will be taken and one left. All right, quick question. Who was swept away by the flood? The righteous or the unrighteous? Unrighteous, right? The righteous are left over. Cool. Let's take some of Jesus' parables. The parable of the fish and the net. Which ones get thrown away, the good or the bad fish? Right, the good fish. Say. The wheat and the weeds. Do the weeds get thrown away or did the wheat get thrown away? The weeds, right. And time and time again, everything that's good is the thing that remains. So perhaps maybe it's time for us to leave, to have some of our theology get left behind, okay? There's just some bad byproducts of some of these choices, because people use this text to lead to left-behind theology. And yet, this text is actually saying the exact opposite thing. You want to be the one left behind, which is Jesus' instruction to this crowd. He's like, look, there's going to be a whole lot of people who are going to be dead at the end of this, but you who are faithful and persevere will remain. And so that's the picture that we have from this. Now, hear me. I know this type of theology had its heyday in most of our formative years. It's a whole book series that sold a lot of books, right? They've made films with Kirk Cameron and other people. And I'm not, this isn't a time to unpack the massness of this theology. But I will say a few things. Historically, that theology is birthed out of a fairly newish theology. That doesn't mean that's wrong just because it's newer. But it's not the historic position ever of the church. It's less than 200 years old. It requires a very unique way to read a book like Revelation, and often just doesn't take into account what apocalyptic literature looks like through history, through other people writing apocalyptic literature. And so you're welcome to disagree with me on this. Maybe I'll preach on the book of Revelation someday because it's a good one. But there's symbolism and language and all this kind of stuff that we just miss. Man, I can go off. Like, there was one of the good byproducts that also had unintended consequences of the Reformation is that we got the Bible in everybody's hands, which is wonderful. Like, to not just have a priest be the gatekeeper of what is true. It's a wonderful byproduct. The problem is we got the Bible in everybody's hands. And so you end up people opening it up who don't understand historical context, don't understand Roman imagery, don't understand apocalyptic literature, don't understand these things, and just read it in a way that that author had never intended that book to be read. And so we just end up in odd places that I don't think we should be in as we interpret these texts. But I'll leave it at that for now. I'll throw the bomb for a few of you, and then you're not going to listen to anything else. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know the day of the Lord's coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have left his house to be broken into. Therefore, you must also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming into at an hour no one expects. So Jesus wraps up, reminding them that this moment is going to be unexpected for you, that they should be ready, which is really the discourse that Jesus is going to go into for the next end of the chapter into the next chapter, but we'll deal with that a lot more next week. So, let me talk through just a couple applications today since I know my clock is not right. Stuff's gonna be crazy. Like, that's his instruction. Now, here's the deal. Do you feel like stuff is crazy? I do, right? Now, like, there's some friends that I have. Theologically, we very much disagree on how to interpret this text. At the same time, I agree with them. Stuff's crazy that has connections to this text, right? There's wars, there's rumors of wars, there's natural disasters, there's false promises from various saviors that are happening today. And there's constant shifts in our culture and our society which feel very destabilizing. Like, there's elections where it's contentious, and it feels like a very divided nation. And it mirrors the uncertainties of Jesus' disciples' face as Jesus spoke to them about the destruction of the temple. Jesus is like, all this chaos is going to happen. There's going to be an upheaval. There's going to be fear. There's going to be doubt. There's going to be all sorts of political promises. There's going to be those who come along and say, I can help deliver you from this. It's going to happen. But Jesus says, you're going to hear rumors and false messiahs. Don't believe it. The world's going to get crazy, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. And all these things are going to happen just as it's happened before. You just need to persevere. So be ready. And as I said, I don't think this passage necessarily is talking about specifics for us to try to interpret into our day and age. But God's instructions to them and God's instructions to us are the same. And we should remember, this stuff all happens in cycles all the time. Kingdoms come and go, right? Empires come and go. Cultures come and go. This is nothing new, which is part of the book of Revelation, is to say, we're going to go through this plenty of more times. Cyclical, expect it. Jesus is still king. We like to look at specific explanations. We like to look at and go, well, this is connected to the Apache helicopter is connected to this thing in Revelation. It must be the sign of the beast, this dragon, whatever, this microchip must be 666. Look, we like to do that. We want clear, concrete connections. But sometimes we completely miss Jesus' point in the process. Because he's telling them endurance through change. God's people have navigated seasons of both prosperity and judgment. And in every instance, Jesus' words are consistent and true. Endure, be faithful, do not be led astray by false promises or quick solutions. So if a political candidate, and I don't care what party you're a part of, suddenly has language connected to them that they are God's anointed and deliverer, flee it. It's just not right. We should be cautious on some of that stuff. And both parties utilize religious language to back their candidate. And I just get a little wary of it. Because Jesus said, watch out for this. Our faith is not built on the stability of worldly systems, but on an unshakable foundation of God's kingdom. Worldly systems will come and go. So endurance through change. Cling to what is good and true. Remain committed to what is good and right. Justice, mercy, love of God, love of neighbor. Hold fast to allegiance to Jesus, recognizing that nothing can ultimately provide deliverance or hope beyond what Jesus offers. And then lastly, discernment amid promises. As I said, many voices are going to come along to say they have solutions, security, prosperity, things that both politicians and sometimes pastors try to promise to their people. And Jesus has warned against false messiahs, being deceived. And there's a high value, particularly into the letters, placed upon discernment. Being faithful means seeking God's wisdom and aligning with his actions and his teachings, even when they're countercultural, even when they're challenging, even when the mainstream has the Jesus name tacked onto it. It doesn't mean that Jesus has anything to do with it. So we should remember God's faithfulness throughout history, even in the most challenging times. Whether it's the destruction of Jerusalem, exile, persecution, the call's been the same. Hold on, endure, keep faith. Now hear me, I may be preaching this for like 30 years from now. I don't know. Like, it's one of those lessons where you're like, it doesn't feel hard to endure right now. Okay, great. I'm sure Jesus looked at his disciples and was like, this is not coming in the next 5 years, guys. Like, this is gonna get worse later. But I need you to know this now. And perhaps that's for us. Or perhaps you decide to move overseas to a place where to endure and persevere is going to be the thing you have to hear. We have brothers and sisters in places all over this world where this very lesson is like so key to their walk right now. The perseverance is not in vain. Jesus even says, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away, as a reminder that God's promises are the things that endure. Even their bodies may not endure the process. Even the cultures and the kingdoms are not going to endure, but my words, my promises will not. And we anchor our hope in a lasting, eternal kingdom, and we'll deal with what anchoring actually looks like next week. And we keep pressing forward in faithfulness. We don't give up on what is good, true, and right. And in seasons of uncertainty, cling to Jesus, the one who is constant and true, and his kingdom is always worth more than any fleeting promise that any politician could give us.